The first thing I should say is that I'm not actually Paul Fillmore. I'm who is down on the program for making the introductory remarks. I'm Bernard Carr. The tradition is that the chair always welcomes people to the meetings. I was the chair until last July, the annual gathering, when Paul Fillmore took over. So in principle, Paul would be introducing the meeting, but he's actually can't get here till tomorrow. So I'm standing in as an ex-chair just to welcome you. So let me just start off by lighting the candle. Well, perhaps before welcoming you to the meeting itself, I should just say a few words about the Scientific and Medical Network, because we're actually going through an extraordinarily exciting time at the moment. We're undergoing a transition. I think if you've been reading the Scientific and Medical Network, and especially if you're the annual gathering, you will know that we've been undergoing a sort of phase transition, which has been driven by a number of things, to some extent by very practical things like our financial problems and things like that. And as a result of that, there have been quite a large number of changes, even within the board. In the last year, we've had a change of the treasurer, we've had the network manager, Sharla, has stood down, and the webmaster has stood down, and indeed the chairman, who was myself, has stood down. And this might seem a rather shocking state of affairs, but actually it's not. It's really reflects the fact that we are undergoing a very important change. And I think in my editorial, the last editorial I wrote, I sort of compared this to a midlife crisis. And the point of that analogy was that actually it's quite good to go through a midlife crisis. You know, we all tend to go through midlife crises, and you learn from them. And it's actually beneficial. However, I know some people didn't quite like the analogy of a midlife crisis. First of all, it makes it sound as though we're halfway through our lives, and I'm sure, hopefully, the SMN will go on for way beyond another 40 years. So now my favourite analogy is simply that we're going through a rebirth process. Rebirth is, well, I have no experience of giving birth, but I'm sure some of you know better than me that birth is a stressful, painful process. It can involve lack of sleep, but it's also a tremendously rewarding process. And you know you're producing something which is going to be really important and have an impact on the world, an even bigger impact on the world than one had before. And so I think, and my role as the retiring chair has merely been to sort of act as a midwife in this rebirth process. And so I know you'll wish Paul Fillmore as the new chair and the board members every success in leading us into this new age. So anyway, that's enough about the SMN itself. In all these changes, there do, of course, have to be some constants to give one a sense of security. And the constants, I suppose, are our big meetings. Of course, one of our big meetings is the Mystics and Scientists meeting every April. But the other big constant in our year is the Beyond the Brain meeting. You know, the Beyond the Brain meeting is, of course, is every other year, and then it's the Body and Beyond in alternate years. And so there are some I don't want to give the impression that the SMN is completely changing. These big meetings will always be really important, which is why I'm particularly pleased to see you all here and welcome you for this 11th meeting of the Beyond the Brain. So it's, you will have gathered that it's the 20th anniversary, because it's every other year. So it's also a special anniversary. So it's just after the 40th anniversary of the SMN, but the 20th anniversary of the Beyond the Brain. And of course, the theme of this meeting is Free Spirits or Determined Machines. And we really have got a galaxy of stars, if you like, to talk about the topics. I'm not going to go into the details of the meeting because it's all before you. However, you will observe that it's not only the SMN structure, but but also the actual structure of the meeting is changing, because you'll notice that you're actually not sitting in your normal formation. You are actually sitting around round tables rather than in aligned chairs. And that is intentional, because people felt that there should be more opportunity for sort of interaction and an experiential element in these meetings, rather than just listening to the sages on stage. And so it's a deliberate response, really, to that request. And I think it's probably a little bit of an experiment. Martin, who is the chair of the program committee, must be commended, and David is the program director, for taking this initiative. But I think it's a bit of an experiment, and we'll be interested to see how it works out. So we will very much value your feedback. The idea will be that at various points in the weekend, you will have a chance to talk to people at the table. And I think the idea is that you don't have to stick always to the same table. You can move around, but it'll give you a chance to interact. And I don't think I have to say much more. I mean, I'm really here just to welcome you. And can I just ask, though, how many people are here from the Scientific and Medical Network? Hands up. Oh, okay. And hands up if you're not from the Scientific and Medical Network. Okay, well, you're a minority. Oddly enough, if you were in the majority, the people, I would say that's really good news, because it's nice to be bringing new people. But you're in a minority, but that means you're even more welcome than you would have been if you were sort of half the audience. And but of course, we're also delighted to have so many long-standing members of the SMN here as well. I know you come from far and wide, and Peter, I know, will be later on going into asking for more information about that. So anyway, I would like to welcome you very warmly. I know we're going to have a wonderful weekend, and you'll have a chance to interact with each other and with the speakers outside the formal sessions. And at this point, my role is to introduce Peter Fenwick. Peter, I should say, is the other constant in the SMN amid all this change. Peter is our president. And chairs normally only last a few years, 5 years, but the president goes on for much longer than that. I'm delighted about that. And it is therefore my great... I mean, Peter really has been a member of the SMN David, you always remind me of this, not quite from the beginning.
77.
From 77. So remember, we were born in 1973. So Peter's goes almost as far back as you can imagine. So it's my great pleasure to now hand over the stage to Peter as president, and he will continue with the introductory remarks.
It's always sad in one way when a chairman retires. And one of the things that I would like to do is to thank Bernard and Marie, his wife, for all the time they spent with the network and everything that they have done for the network. It was a great honor and pleasure for us to have a leading cosmologist as our chair. And it was great fun for me, because I could walk up to him and say, "Do you know what dark matter is yet?" And he would cast his eyes down and say, "Not quite." And we really gained enormously from Bernard's chairmanship. So, Bernard, I'd like to thank you very, very much indeed for everything you've done. But hold on. Bernard is going to be given a fulsome and good present from the network, but I wanted to make my own donation to Bernard. And so I brought down by EasyJet, much to the horror of the cabin crew, an arrow. Now, many of you who have been to Japan will know what this is. How many know what this is? Oh, none of you. Right. Well, every new year, the temples in Japan sell lucky arrows. It comes fully charged with luck. And you keep it in your house, preferably above a door, and the luck pours out onto you and all your guests. Now, I felt that Bernard simply could not, as his wife is Japanese as well, could not leave the network without having a large portion of luck with him. But also, he's just retired. So what could be better than giving Bernard a lucky arrow all the way from Japan? Bernard, come and collect your arrow. So there's a lucky arrow for you.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. This was completely unexpected. And I'm very glad to receive the arrow in my hands. And I'm also slightly concerned that the thought that Peter brought this and could well have been arrested, I suppose, at Heathrow Airport for bringing in a lethal weapon. And I think it's a great... You have a great friend who's prepared to risk jail in order to give you a gift. So thank you. I will bring this home, and both myself and Mari will treasure this. And I'm not quite sure which direction to point it, but anyway, it will point towards the future. And I'm sure it will bring us luck, but also I know also that the SMN will have good fortune in its future as well. So thank you very much, Peter. Indeed.
And I'd like to also give you a small present for Marie, because no chairman can exist without a sympathetic and loving wife. Marie has certainly been that and very helpful to the network. So let us all thank Bernard then for everything that he's done for the network. Say how sad we are to see him go. Say that we recognize that he's come to a point in his life when things have to change. But he's still on the program committee. So that's fantastic. Bernard, thank you so much. Okay. So this conference, I think, is a very important one. As you can see, free spirits or determined, what are you? I hope you've all asked yourselves this question. I thought I'd read you a little story, and it's a question of, were these people who were carrying out these acts free spirits, or was it all determined, and if so, what does determined mean? In fact, I got this from The Observer. Some of you may have seen it. James Veitch mean anything to you? Okay, perhaps you didn't. But you've all had them, these emails, yes? So-and-so and so-and-so, an old friend of yours, is unfortunately marooned in some far part of the world. Okay. Catherine Harrington is apparently marooned. Dear James, I could not inform anyone about our trip because it was impromptu. We had to be in Manila, Philippines, for a program. Our journey has turned sour. We misplaced our wallet, passport, and cell phone. I will be indeed very grateful if I can get a loan of 1,800 euros from you. I promise to refund it in full as soon as I return. James replies, Catherine, of course I can help you out. What happened? Is everything okay? How's Keith doing? Catherine, James, I'm so glad you replied back. Let me know if you're heading to the Western Urine Outlet right now. James, of course, don't worry. How's Keith, though? Catherine, to James, James, Keith is fine. Please let me know. He's having a meeting with the British Embassy now to get replacement passports. Please go to the Western Union. I owe you a lot, but please go. James. Cat, I'll pop along first thing tomorrow. I must say, though, Keith seems remarkably capable for a Yorkshire Terrier. Last, I remember he could roll over and woof for a treat. Now you say he's taking meetings at the British Embassy. What are you feeding him on? And I think that's really nice. Now, who's the free spirit? Or who's determined? So I think actually this is very important. This meeting is very important for that. Now then, where do you all come from? I'm not going to say who comes from Europe, because some of my friends may say that is not a good question. So what I'll say is, who comes from the British Isles? Oh, wow. Okay. Who comes from across the pond? Oh, that's really nice, actually, yeah. And who comes from Boston? Yeah! I have a daughter in Massachusetts, so we automatically have a link. Anybody from Northern Ireland? Anybody from Europe proper? As okay, so it's mainly the British Isles, actually, isn't it? Any rate, you're all very welcome here. Now, what I would like you to do is, just before I go on a little bit more into what the conference is about, I would like you all to talk to each other, because there'll be people on your table who you don't know. Make sure you talk to them. And the questions you want to ask is, why did you come here? Was it for the food? What do you hope to gain? What do you hope to gain? And then the other one is, can it be improved? So three questions. Why did you come? What do you hope to gain? Can it be improved? Okay, you have 3 minutes. Go. Okay. Well, I hope you've all met free spirits, or have you spotted a deterministic machine amongst you? Because this is definitely going to be our question. So today's conference, I think, is a very important one. I think it's important for two or three reasons, one of which is that neuroscience is now getting to the point where we get incredible sophistication in terms of the analytical algorithms. I've myself been working with a new phase shift algorithm, which looks at the causality between two waveforms. Now, before you only look at a waveform and look at what in fact is correlation, it's not really interesting, because you can't see which is leading, which is driving the other, or are they just related. But with the new algorithm, you can. And some of the work which we've been doing, and is just starting to come into the literature, is in fact looking at within one brain algorithm about what frequencies are driving other frequencies. That's exciting enough. But for various reasons, I felt the best thing to do was to look at two people. And so we put the machines on two people. And straight away, you can see that their brains are having really quite detailed conversations with each other, because we can say which brain is driving, which brain is not driving. So that's just an example of some of the new exciting techniques which are coming into the neuroscience domain. The next thing is, of course, that the actual sensitivity and specificity of the techniques that we have, both in terms of MEG, which I like, and in terms of fMRI, are getting more and more specific. I mean, 9 Tesla machines gives you really enormous information about what's going on in the brain. So I think it's a very important time from that point of view, but I think it's a very important time philosophically too. And I'm going to just try and say just a little bit about that. But first of all, let's welcome our speakers, who are all here, with the exception of... Richard Filberstein, who's coming from Australia, but unfortunately he has an infection, so he's going to be with us later on in the conference. And of course, as you know, Richard Davidson, we have a video from him. And so there are, in fact, some slight programming changes, and I'll just tell you those now. And that is that Marilyn Monk, who's a member of the network and is enormously important in the epigenetic field. In fact, you could argue that she was really the starter of epigenetics. She used to work at Great Ormond Street, and she has very kindly agreed to give a talk, Epigenetic Gene Programming and the Alexander Technique. Now, it will be, I know, an extremely good session. So what we're going to do is we're going to move that up to 8:15 p.m. on the Friday, where Richard Davidson is.
Saturday,
thank you. To 8:15 on the Saturday. And he will be then moved back into Marilyn's position on the Sunday, 2 p.m. So I think that's an excellent change. The other question I want to ask you is, you will notice that there are two optional meditation or movement sessions. Now, let's deal with meditation first. The meditation will be in here, and it's from 7:45 to 8:15. Which ones of you think you'll be coming to the meditation in here? Okay, that's a nice lot of you. Now, amongst those, which ones of you would like the meditation to be led or to be silent? Let's have a look at the led people and the silent people. Well, the silence at it, okay. All right, so it'll be silent meditation here at 7:45. Now, movements, David will be taking movements outside, and it's going to be a glorious day. So there's going to be no argument that you should be staying in bed, glorious day outside, nice meditation inside. Come on, you can't stay in bed. It's going to be learning panurhythmi movements, but if you look at 3 p.m. On the Saturday, you'll see that there are a lot of things going on: free walking, swimming, networking, optional workshops, mindfulness, Tai Chi, and panurhythmi. So this will be David's movements with music, if you want that. So with those as the program changes, let me just... go on to the next question. I said I thought this was an important time, and I think it is, and I think it's an important time because strategies for changing people's consciousness in very specific ways are now coming more and more onto the market, more and more onto the market, I think is probably correct. We are at the moment in subject-object consciousness. We're in subject-object consciousness like this. There's a perceiver. You all agree that you're perceivers. And you all look out on an objective world, the outside world. And so there is perception and the subjects and an object, and that is how everything is constructed, more or less. Now, what is happening in the consciousness field is that non-dual consciousness, which has been around since the time of the Buddha, is now changing with a mechanism for producing non-dual consciousness. So what is non-dual consciousness? It's this. You lose your subject, so you can see why it's important to this symposium, because we're asking, are we free spirits or are we determined? So you lose your subject, you lose your object, and you only have perception left. So this goes straight to the heart of this conference, free spirits or determined? And in fact, you have, as I say, no subject, no object, only the world now, just what is, no agency. In other words, rather like those schizophrenics that feel that their limbs are moved for them, except it's different in this state, and no time. There's no future and there's no past. There's only the moment now. Now, you can think very easily about people who are in this state of consciousness. Eckhart Tolle would be an extremely good one to mention. And these people have what is called persistent well-being. They're really happy and stress-free the whole time. So they've entered a different state of consciousness. Now, the argument is that this state of consciousness is awakening. So non-symbolic consciousness, if there really is a mechanism for producing this, then it's something science ought to know about and something which can be done. What I'm going to do is to show you Rupert Spira. I'm not going to show you much of him. I'll just show you a two-minute clip. Who knows Rupert Spira? Okay, look him up on the web. He is somebody who is considered to have awoken, and his mental state is really interesting. And what I'll do, if I can get this to go... Oh, no, I can't. Yeah, I had this trouble before, actually. No, it won't. I can't get my cursor up, but I can this way. I think. I'm not getting that up either. Any rate, what Rupert will tell you, that he lives in the now, there is no agency, he does nothing, he only just does what arises, but he doesn't do it because he's lost his sense of personal I. He has stopped thinking so that he no longer follows thoughts, and so it's really a massive change in his perception. But it goes further than that. Most of you will have heard of the cities. Yes, these are the changes in cognition and so on that you get as you progress along this ladder towards awakening. One of which is seeing colours on people and so on. Well, this new technique also has the cities evolve in the people. And if it's correct, and there is, in the courses that have been run, in the first 100 people, 80 to 90% have transferred into this state of consciousness. And so then the question becomes, should they? Are they free spirits? Are they automatons? Should we live in that sort of world? So really interesting. So then let's get on with... Well, you've seen the next slide. It's obviously not going to come up. No, I won't do. Any rate, next slide says the end. So I'd very much like now to, with that as a introduction to how important this conference is, and if any of you would like to see Rupert Spira, and I also have others who've transited into this level of consciousness, like Tony Parsons, I have. And I have one or two other people. I'd be very happy to show you the videos. And they're all going to the same question. Is there an I? Do they do anything? Can they think? Can they make decisions? So then, it looks nice. That's where we are in Scotland. What I would like to do now is to introduce you to David Lorimer. Anybody not know David Lorimer? Oh, brilliant. Then I don't have to give you a long introduction. David and I have been friends for very many years, and you've all seen the 200 or so books that he reviews each year in Network. He has a most fantastic memory. You might think he doesn't read those books, but if you ask him about it, he will say, oh, yes, that's interesting. That's page 42, isn't it? So he has an astonishingly retentive memory, very creative person, and the work that he's doing with children is absolutely outstanding. How many kids in the UK now?
Well, the last project was 90,000 around the world.
90,000 children around the world do his program on character building. I mean, it is absolutely astonishing. David, I really do congratulate you for this. It's fantastically good. So, David, come and tell us about what have you got? The Mechanistic Metaphor, A Brief History.